I'm very fine with chaos, of course, so no worries. Well, it is really good to be here with you all, and I am Vern Rempel. Been a pastor in the Mennonite denomination for over 30 years, and I'm currently also a Denver hospice chaplain, and I've started a new Mennonite congregation on the south side of the Denver metro area. It's a house church, and we have some fun there. We play the blues and do Mennonite hymns. So, you know, it's fun. And I love your music. So gorgeous. Wow. Yeah, it's just beautiful. Yeah, so thank you. And I love this space, too. This is really nice. I could meditate here for the rest of the day. So, actually, I kind of am, because I'm going to be speaking to the UUs next. but, yeah, it's really good to be with you all. So Marilyn and I got married the year Reagan was elected. Does anybody know which year that is? 1980, if you can believe it. We love traveling to presidential museums and libraries. It's one of our avocations. We do road trips, and we find it fun to learn, you know, from the mistakes and the successes of our presidential leaders. And it's just an interesting way to look at different eras of our national development and so on. Very much more in those places than you might imagine if you haven't ever seen one. It's really cool. We do have two children. They're both married, and we have our daughter and her husband and our only grandson live north of London, which is a bummer because it's a long ways away. It's nice to go to England. We've been over there a few times, but yeah, we miss him. He's almost three. We don't see him enough. He has really long legs now already, so I was like, he's gone from a baby to this long-legged kid, and we can't even see him more. He needs that grandparental influence, you know, in his life. Yeah, exactly. I know. Not enough spoiling going on. We try to spoil him, you know, by sending stuff, but still, it's not the same. Since our daughter and her husband and our grandson live in England, north of London, I do want to begin by mentioning something you may or may not have heard about. Fatbergs. You know, I'll know about fatbergs. A few people are nodding. Well, fatbergs. These are giant globules, agglomerations of fat underneath the city of London and in outlying towns, in the storm sewers and in the drains. And what they are is an accumulation of our use of fats. And so lots of fats go down the drain, as you can imagine, from toiletries, from makeup, and of course from all of our cooking, etc. And it tends to accumulate. I don't know why in England exactly, but you know, whatever. Probably, yeah. So it's probably something to do with Harry Potter. You know, it might be actually. But the point of it is that these fatbergs are the sum result of, they're an accumulative result of our decisions and our lifestyle. So interesting, right? A subway-sized globule of fat is the result of human activity. How nice. That's pretty awesome. They even found dentures in some of them. So, honey, have you seen my dentures? So, you know, it's like other things. It's like global warming. Also, it's an accumulation. It's a result of all of our collective decision-making. All of us, without exception, participate in the creation of this reality. And another one that's very close to the question of what it means to be Mennonite is violence. And so, you know, fatbergs, global warming, violence. Violence pollutes what I would call our human ecosphere. So our human ecosphere is being polluted by our violence. And so can we clean up the fat? Can we lower the temperature of the globe? And can we stop solving things by killing? That's the Mennonite question. Can we stop solving things by killing? And that's a tough question. It is. But that's the big Mennonite question. All things are in interwoven systems. We are all doing things. We're all making something together. All of us, not one party or the other, political party. I'm not talking about fun parties. I'm talking about not one party. Not one party or the other. Not friends or enemies or this country or that country. But all of us create an accumulation of results together because we are all in an interconnected web. We can't opt out of it. There's no opting out of it. Even if you move to rural Idaho, you're still in the interconnected web. Do you know, this is my favorite biological science discovery of the last couple of years, do you know about the mycelial web? Any mycelial web people here? Okay. So, yeah. This Canadian forest biologist discovered that underneath the forest floor is this vast interconnected web of fungal threads, so like mushrooms, fungal threads, and also the rootlets that can stretch for miles, these almost microscopic rootlets, and this is how trees are connected to each other. She noticed that if you cut down one tree, it affects other trees. Well, how? And so she discovered that there's this whole subterranean communication network going on. So, of course, I invite you in good ministerial style to take this as a metaphor. It is a metaphor of the greater web that is underneath us all, amidst us all. And let's call it the relation sphere or whatever, but the web of goodwill and respect and mutual consideration and regard. And we do well to pay attention to and attend to this human garden, this human soil that we all are, this humus, you know. I love that that's the same root, humus and, you know. It is a gift. It is a gift. We are intended to be a gift to each other. We're intended to be a human mycelial web. Wow. David Brooks, who I always call my favorite Republican, he notes that when babies come out of their mother's wombs, the first thing they do is they reach out. They reach out to the world. That's the first thing. Every baby ever born has come out reaching out into the world and wanting connection. Isn't that marvelous? That's an amazing thing. You can hear this reaching out and this longing at any restaurant table, anywhere you go, anytime. Overheard conversations. What do you guys want to do? Do you like arugula? Well, which one is that? You look really nice in the gray with the pink earrings. Are you coming over to watch the game? Did you see the new Star Wars? Have you read Ta-Nehisi Coates' latest book? And so on. So any restaurant, you hear people reaching out to each other. We want to. We long to reach out. That's why we get stuck in the office talking, come to service late. So much striving and longing for connection. Brené Brown has this lovely phrase that I really like. She says, we are all needing to make a raw, honest bid for connection. A raw, honest bid for connection. That's what babies do. They come out without the filters on. They come out without any pretense. Make a raw, honest bid for connection. How lovely is that? And how wonderful if we can do that. And so that's what I'm trying to do here with you today, the Mennonite, whatever that is, and the Christian, and so on. I guess, apparently in your series, I'm the Christian. Is that right? Yeah, okay. So, sorry about that. We're going to have to get an additional Christian, you know, to actually get it. But so I just want to tell you a little bit about Mennonite. In today's world as one expression of Christianity. So we Mennonites always start out our meditations with Bible verses, with Bible readings. So I have a very long Bible reading for you today. The verse is, love your enemies. You know that was in the Bible, of course. Anybody know which book it's from? No, you don't need to know, but Matthew 5:44, love your enemies and pray for those who persecute you. So it's from a part of the Bible called the Sermon on the Mount, and it's in the book of Matthew, where it's a collection of a bunch of sayings by Jesus. And So the Sermon on the Mount is beloved by Mennonites. It is the center and the starting point of all of our confessions of faith. From 1525 to today, Sermon on the Mount is always right in there. We use that, and this verse, love your enemy, is in the middle of that sermon for us. That's a big question for Mennonites. Love your enemies. How to love your enemies. And so one way to look at the Mennonite history from 1525 to today is as a centuries-long exploration of what does it mean if we decide that killing is no longer a solution that we can use in this world. What does it mean if we decide that killing is a solution we can no longer use in this world? And that's a tough question. That is a good one. And for Mennonites, it is given narrative force by studying the life of Jesus. And so that's why we're Christians. You know, I mean, that's the Christian thing, is that we study the life of Jesus. And the way I would put it is, and it's especially true for Mennonites in general, it's Jesus' love that we are intrigued by. That Jesus refused to stop loving, even to the point where the Roman authorities executed him, because he was loving, I guess, what, too many people or the wrong people? Love is very destabilizing of the empire, you know. So I wouldn't ever say this. I wouldn't ever say Jesus came to die. I don't know if you've ever heard that Christian shorthand. Jesus came to die. Oh, yeah. To me, that's like a theological short circuit. I would rather say this. Jesus was born to love. That's like the Bruce Springsteen Jesus. You know, born to love. But his song was, I just can't help loving you. Ah. Even if you are the outcast, the embarrassment to the state, the social pariah, also, if you're a religious or political leader, Jesus even loved you, religious political leaders. Now, Jesus got very angry with some of them, but, you know, love does register as angry. I believe the Unitarian Universalists have a hymn that says we are a gentle, angry people, which I think is a great, isn't that right, Julia? Yeah, that's an awesome hymn. I actually added that one to the Mennonite canon. I thought, Mennonites are not very good at anger because we're from the Midwest and we ate too much Jell-O. But so, you know. But love does register sometimes as resistance and anger. Love also comes in the form of grace. How wonderful it is. And Jesus used the metaphor of the table over and over again. But how wonderful to sit at the table with our beloved, with our people from our community. Ah, and what about our enemy? What does it mean to be at the table with our enemy? That is a Mennonite question. Now, I don't know if any of you come from big food traditions. Mennonites do. We make some pie. You will not forget our pie. It will not forget you. It will remember you for the next month. Oh, yeah, but we can make some pie. We can make some. Marilyn and I make pie. We both love to make pie. We have, rhubarb, you know, pecan. Her pecan pie, wow. We just had it. The amazing thing is it only has 5 calories per piece, too. It's really amazing. Or something like that, 5-ish, you know. So love your enemies. Violence, killing, the will to kill and to end the other. We may have our reasons, we may have our rationales for this, but as Martin Luther King Jr. said, violence, the blood of violence, goes down into the soil and it comes up again as violence. It springs up again with the fruit of violence. I call it the human soul soil system into which violence falls and springs up again. And it harms the garden. It harms the garden of God into which we were all born and into which we all reached out as we were being born. All right. Well, this is full disclosure for Mennonites, because here's a part of Mennonites that I don't like. And it's an annoying part of our history, so I'm going to tell you about it. Second thing I want you to know is that Mennonites have done excommunication over the years, in case you don't know. So I'm going to tell you about that. We are cousins of the Amish. And the Amish actually broke away from the Mennonites in 1693. The Amish broke away from the Mennonites in order to be more conservative. And if you just look at Amish and Mennonites, like in popular culture, you would think the Mennonites were like a liberal version of the Amish, but it's actually the other way around. The Amish are a conservative version of the Mennonites from 1693 in France. So it's a little different. But the Amish have a practice called shunning. And shunning is when you have done something that's judged to be harmful to the community, you're excluded until you come to your senses, which, you know, in one way sounds like a good idea, but in another way, it really fast, really quickly sounds like a really bad idea. I mean, to me, like really, who has ever come to their senses by being cut off from everything else? Oh, do we have a penal system like that here in the United States? Corrective, reformatory. That'd be a whole other sermon. In fact, if you want me to preach a second sermon like at noon afterwards, I'll be happy to preach one. I'll be happy to preach one on our corrective system. So that'd be another sermon. So Mennonites, instead of calling it shunning, call it excommunication, which is from the Catholic practice where you communicate by taking communion. And so if you're excommunicated, you're not allowed to take communion. Another idea, which sounds like it could be good, you know, well, we got to work for keeping everybody on the right path, quickly sounds really bad, though, because pretty soon problems arise. For Mennonites, it got started because Mennonites did not want to any longer participate in war. In 1525, this was called "Do Not Bear the Sword." And I don't know if you've heard that phrase, but of course the sword was the weapon, you know, the iconic weapon in the 1500s. And so do not bear the sword. And the excommunication, the separation, was between those who refused to bear the sword and those who thought that killing was a good idea or a necessary idea, you know, or whatever. So this is where it got started. So that sounds kind of okay, you know. I mean, you have to differentiate, but it quickly devolved into a centuries-long series of problems for Mennonites. And by the way, the word Anabaptist is what we were called for about the first 20 to 30 years of the movement, and then we became called Mennonites, which is a whole other topic that I don't have time to go into, but... So this excommunication thing sowed seeds of distortion, and, you know, it all starts out very well, separating yourself from killing. The problem is, quickly, superiority narratives arise. Well, we are the believers, and they are the unbelievers. So now you have separation. Is the purpose of excommunication really creating separation? I mean, that's often the result, but... Now you have separation. Soon, people were being excommunicated for all kinds of issues over the centuries, depending on, you know, the mood of the community or who was the leader or whatever. I think we have done excommunication for any issue you could name. I don't know. Maybe not quantum mechanics. I'm not sure we've gotten to that one yet, but maybe we will. Oh, no, those quarks, they do not move like you say they do. So this is the downside of the Mennonite movement. But love your enemies. That's pretty cool, in my opinion. Love your enemies. That's really something. It does raise, of course, a whole bunch of urgent questions. Like, what do you do with murderous dictators? That's what people always want to know. You know, it's like on the internet, all questions after six exchanges end up with Hitler. I don't know if you've ever heard that. Like, so that's a Mennonite lifelong, like, well, what do you do about Hitler? So anyway, I do have a response to that. It's not adequate, because I don't know. But what I say is that my short answer is, if we think we do think we need to kill, but how much would happen if we applied ourselves to not killing? the way we have applied ourselves to killing. So what if we spent billions and billions of dollars every year figuring out how not to kill people? And, all right, there we go. Hey, this is good. I got it. All right. Yeah, that's awesome. So what if we applied our technological know-how and our social skills and our talents to not killing? I don't know. I don't know what all would result, but think about that investment. What if the Pentagon's vocation was to not kill, was to offer a good defense? We need defense. I mean, lock a door, you know, once in a while or whatever. But what if the vocation was non-lethal? What if we had a non-lethal Pentagon? The five-sided, you know, paragon of non-lethal engagement with the world. Wow, wouldn't that be amazing? Restorative justice offices on all levels and so on. Pretty interesting. I don't know if that would be an adequate response. I don't know what all would happen. But that's the question. That's usually my answer for what about Hitler is, you know, well, how did we prepare for Hitler? Like, what were we doing to get ready? And what you know, et cetera. There's a lot going on in there. That would be my third sermon this morning. After the criminal justice system at noon, at 1 o'clock, we'll do. I know. Bring in the chicken. What if we took killing out of consideration? What might we learn? What new practices might arise? Okay, back to Mennonites. The last thing I want you to know about Mennonites is this, that we really want to be in loving community with you. With you, and when I say you, I mean all the people of the world. We really want to be in loving community with you. Mennonites, as you may know, were horribly persecuted in the 1500s. We even developed a book called The Martyr's Mirror, which is a huge, fat book that tells all the stories of all these martyrs. And always an amusing anecdote that the Amish give the martyr's mirror as wedding gifts. So here's your wedding gift, ka-chunk, a giant 5-pound book of martyr stories. Enjoy that. And yet they still procreate. I don't know. So out of this persecution, Mennonites tended to become quiet farmers and craftspeople. And so a lot of times if people know anything about Mennonites, they think about that. Oh, they're those quiet farmers and craftspeople, which is true. That was kind of the result of the persecution. But at the heart of the movement is really a desire to be in loving community with you. A community like no other, with a heart for peace, for that peace that passes all understanding, from Philippians 4:7. So we could talk about how Mennonites use the Bible. It's an argument among us, of course. But love tends to be the measure that matters most when we read the Bible. How is this about that love? And love, especially that results in what Mennonites typically call the peace of Christ, which is this commitment to not kill and to find a finer path in the world. So next week in Rocky Ford, over there, is the Mennonite Relief Sale. Anybody going? Mennonite Relief Sale? You ought to go. Get some pie. Yeah,
quilts.
Yeah. Quilts. Pie beyond all human understanding. Yeah. So it's a quilt auction, bake sale, music event, and all-around fall festival. I'm putting on a show on Friday night, by the way, special plug, a musical hour down there. So, you know, come out for that on Friday night, Rocky Ford. The purpose of it is to raise money for international relief and development. And Mennonites do this because we want to be part of the international web. We want to be part of people's lives. Mennonites want to be connected in this way and go to places and serve in places of need. And also here, like with Mennonite Disaster Service, cleaning up after tornadoes and the like. Mennonite Disaster Service actually built tiny homes for the homeless in Denver a couple of years ago. And also things like going to the border and advocating for compassionate immigration reform. Come on. And so
Mennonites do all of these things. We don't kill. We don't go to war. But we do stuff, you know, trying to figure out what to do. Love your enemies and pray for those who persecute you. One way to address this is to go out into the world in service. It doesn't solve everything, but I would suggest it probably does a lot. You know, there's a lot going on in there. And to love one's enemies, there's a deep recognition there that we all need restorative justice. We all need repentance and forgiveness and hope and vision and all of the social, emotional liquids through which life flows. Have you all heard Bryan Stevenson talking about the need for a truth and reconciliation process in the United States around our lynching history, around white supremacy? Brilliant, brilliant. Listen to him sometime. Just Google it, Bryan Stevenson talking about this. It's just a lovely, lovely vision. And so there is a sense here in the Mennonite movement that there is an essential goodness and a divine light in all of us, in each one. There is a sense, as Parker Palmer puts it, that we all have everything that we need. I don't need to add anything to you. And here's the real rub. I don't need to add anything to my enemies. That's not the point of the engagement. The point of engagement with an enemy is my unilateral decision to love and to find my way with that. Humans can be very dangerous, of course. We have our distortions and our terror. Humans are created good. We reach out as we are born. It was good is the big word in the creation narrative in the book of Genesis. God says it was good, it was good, it was good. I kind of like it as the original rap song, like it was good. So we can go down the deep wells of fear and loathing and destruction. And, well, you can't get through a sermon without a quote from Friedrich Nietzsche, I find, from time to time. So Nietzsche said, "The earth has a skin, and this skin has diseases, and one of those diseases is humanity." Ah! What a terrible thing to call part of God's creation a disease. But really, with war, with white supremacy, with global warming, etc., we do have a lot to work on, don't we? And so Mennonites, for this reason, tend not to be so optimistic as we tend to be hopeful, which means that we try to find ways to work, not expecting that things are all just going to be okay, but try to find ways to offer love no matter what. You know, prejudice and destruction and so on are big problems. There is another problem I would submit to you, which is beauty. Beauty is a problem because how can the dawn be so gorgeous when my loved one has died? I'm a hospice chaplain, and it's so strange. I was called out just this last week to a patient's home where the grandmother and mother had died. And the dawn was just gorgeous. I was called out at 3:30, so, you know, but as the lights started appearing, and that's always true. That's always been true. The light still falls onto Pikes Peak, still falls onto the mountains in ways that are just ineffable. And yet we all die. And yet the village still gets destroyed. We've dropped atomic bombs. All of this horrible stuff. And yet beauty keeps returning and returning, and it doesn't make sense. It's an inexplicable problem, I think, beauty is. And so I would submit to you that there is a fundament of beauty in creation, and it doesn't desist. It is the thing itself of which violence and all destruction is just a distortion. So we're not in a pitched battle here between violence and beauty. Beauty is the foundation. All of these other things are distortion. The beauty sings right next to us, and it sings in the stars. Have you heard the phrase, the music of the spheres? I love that notion, the music of the spheres. So Mennonite commitment to service and nonviolence is one way to tend the garden of the fundament of beauty. The global system of which we are all a part, that quantum particle and hum and dance in which we all live and move and have our being. Mennonites call that the Holy Spirit. There are a lot of names for that. This great resource, this living presence that's among us. What is it, that vibration, that good vibration? Today I'm going to call this greatness among us, this something more, in the words of the poet David White, the grand array. Why does the grand array keep showing up, baby after baby, place after place, dawn after dawn? It's a mystery. It's a problem. It's amazing. Well, when we can love our enemies, when we can offer ourselves in service, when we can live in extravagant generosity, then the grand array shows up. Then it is a gift in which we live. It is loveliness. It is life itself. It is the song of love. And that's how I want to end, with a song of love. I'm going to fill the world with silly love songs, like Paul McCartney said. So Ruby Sales, in an interview with Michelle Alexander, sang a great song of nonviolent love that I had never heard before. I heard this interview a couple of years ago. Ruby Sales, Michelle Alexander. And the song would sound trite and glib all by itself. But here's the thing. It's the song that the marchers learned in order to face the water cannons and the dogs when they walked across the Edmund Pettus Bridge. Wow. That's amazing. And this is the song that they were singing. And I invite you to sing along as you wish.